This is T. Randolph again, and it's my distinct pleasure to have my good friend Sam Gallucci with me.
It's great to be with you.
Thank you, Sam. And we're going to talk a little bit about your life today. For you listeners, he will be someone I'll have on the show pretty regularly. And today we're going to talk about Sam's background, who he is, how he got to be where he is. And really, we're going to talk about your journey, the journey that you have experienced in this lifetime. Mm. And so I want to start first with a little bit about your background. Tell me, where are you from? How'd you grow up? And where did you go to school?
Well, I was born into an Italian family. And my mother and father were both heritage from Italy. My grandparents all came over and settled in this country. And I'm a second generation Italian American. And I had a wonderful childhood. It was a lower income, lower middle class income family in Southern California. And we knew the meaning of hard work and family. And while we had very little, man, I thought, I would never know it. And there was a lot of love and respect, lots of tradition, lots of Italian tradition growing up in our family. And went through high school and then moved on, went to junior college and then on to San Diego State University, where I got my Bachelor of Administration. And then met the love of my life, my wife, Toni, and we were engaged our senior year. And got married shortly thereafter and then started a career beginning with IBM.
And when you were in sales, I know we had talked, you had mentioned to me something your father told you. Do you want to share that with us, please?
You know, it's amazing because for me, my life was kind of defined by a couple of key instances and moments that I'm so grateful for, I'm so blessed and thankful for. One of them was just my mother and father's example of commitment in marriage. That was a big one. And they fought. They fought like cats and dogs, but there was a deep sense of respect and love there that that was demonstrated in that process. And the second was my father would say to me from time to time, he would come up to me and say, "Sam, I'm proud of you. I know whatever you'll do, you're going to be great at it." And that has stuck with me and been the most powerful words that a father can say to
us. You know, as I'm sitting here right now looking at you, I see your eyes starting to tear up a little bit. And as you listeners know, there's a lot of crying when we do these shows.
Yes.
That really touched you, didn't it, Sam?
It really did. It was an amazing thing. And in my profession today, I have the opportunity to counsel many, many men and women. And what I'm finding, Randy, is that it's rare that fathers speak words of encouragement over their kids. In fact, it's usually just the opposite. It's usually either no words whatsoever, hardly ever hearing "I love you," and more to the point, negative or chastising or words that really tear down. And so I am realizing more and more how privileged and I was to have a father that would speak encouragement over me.
And really what he was doing was he was speaking a blessing over you, wasn't he, Sam?
Absolutely. And I look back on that, and with all his faults and frailties, as happens as you get older in life, you appreciate your parents more and more in different ways than you ever thought you would.
Right.
That's the one thing that I remember the most. It was a blessing, and it has been a blessing.
Right. And you know what? While we're on this issue, I know we want to get into your background, but I think it's important right now. Let's just talk about the power of words and what they meant to you and how you have seen words either positively or negatively affect people. And Sam, if you could just briefly, when those words were spoken over you, that you received the blessing from your father, at the time that happened, did that give you a sense of encouragement, a sense of richness, knowing that, in essence, my father has spoken a prophecy over me, meaning he has told me that he has confidence and belief in me. And because he's done that, I'm going to share in that vision for me personally. Did you feel that way?
That's absolutely correct, Randy. And this is what happened. I'll never forget it. third grade came and went, and I was flunking third grade. School wasn't too much of interest to me. And in fact, I remember I had D's and F's, and I remember being in the principal's office with my mother and father. And they scooted me out into the outer room, but I could hear through the little glass there. And they were saying, we highly recommend that you hold your son back and let him retake the third grade. And they really pressed in. I'll never forget. They really pressed in on my parents to do that. And they said, well, we'll think about it. And then as they were leaving, you know, they turned to the principal and said, you know, we've thought about it and we're not going to do that. We're going to move him on to the fourth grade. He says, he's going to fail in fourth grade. I guarantee he's going to fail. So I'm hearing this from the principal. So they get me in the car, and I am just terrified. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, I'll never forget. They're going to punish me and get really angry. And we get home. My father sits me down, and he says, I want to tell you something, Sam. He says, I believe in you. We believe in you. And we know you can do it. Not only do we know you can do it, we're proud of you for the person that you are. And we know that whatever you do, that's the first time he said, I know you're going to be great at it. And then he would say that, not every day, but frequently enough that it became a mantra or a blessing. I went into the fourth grade, and with all of the deficiencies in learning that I had, I went from almost failing to B's and A's, and had this incredible report card. And it set me on a path to do fairly well in school. So that was the first impact in my life. And all through my life, you know, my parents, my mother particularly, would be in awe of the things that I accomplished. She said, I can't believe you did that. I can't believe you accomplished that. And as I look at my life today and the things God's accomplished, I still remember the power of that blessing to have courage to step out beyond our comfort zone because of the words that were spoken over her.
Incredible. Yeah. And the one thing, I have to bring my wife into this again because I do that from time to time. She's inspired me with the notion that words carry a lot of power. And when you speak words, and once they're out, you really can't take them back. So be very careful about how you say things and when you say things. And the other thing I want to leave the listeners with on this particular topic, there probably are some people out there thinking, you know, I haven't been very good about speaking words of encouragement, words of blessing. And maybe some of you are thinking, oh my gosh, I'm a bad person, or I just haven't done things the way I should. And what I want to encourage you to believe and to know is this: no matter what has happened in your past, no matter how you have communicated with people that you love or your friends, today's a new day. Today's a fresh day. And you can start today to speak words of blessing over those that you love, those that you care about. And also, as part of that, never be afraid to tell those that you care about, will you forgive me? Will you accept my request for forgiveness? And sometimes, so much of the time, when you say to someone, I was wrong, I'm sorry, people generally will respond to that. They may not initially respond the way you hope that they would, but if you honestly go to somebody with your heart and say, I'm really, truly sorry, most of the time, that person will at least open up the door for a better relationship. So whether it's with your spouse, your children, your friends, your parents, I encourage anyone who's out there, if you feel that you didn't get the blessing or you didn't pass the blessing on in terms of words or what have you, don't be afraid to start fresh and to go forward.
And, absolutely. I can't agree more.
Have you seen a situation where someone maybe didn't receive the blessing in the past, but through an event, they were able to get that blessing from someone that they really cared about? Have you seen that?
Absolutely, Randy. And my line of work today as a pastor, the most incredible miracle that that I see is somebody that has been walking with really curses over their life. And though they don't think of it that way, if you think just a little bit, you can get to a place where you say, you know, that really was a curse over my life. And it's not that, you know, parents intentionally say, I want to curse my kids. I mean, I'm sure that can happen, but it is the result of speaking death versus life. And as a pastor, as I said, I see it frequently. And the devastation of some lives that have walked with the shadowing, overshadowing of, you know, you're never going to amount to anything, or you're a little devil, or you know, that's not good enough, and stupid. In other words that are spoken over a life, and then they just receive those, and they're just ingrained in them, because those relationships between mothers and fathers and children are so deep, that blood relationship, that it sinks much deeper into our souls than when others say it. So I've seen many, many that have walked into this place destroyed because of words that have been spoken over their life. And in the counseling sessions, we get to a place of understanding what those words were and how they've affected their life. And then we start speaking words of life. And one of the greatest sources of words of life, or the greatest sources, is the Bible. And I have found the profound impact in my own life, as well as in the life of those that will use the Word of God as the primary tool to receive words of life. They speak them into their life as they read it, and as others read it to them, it has a profound impact on their life.
Well, we're going to spend some time on that in a different show, but for those who are listening, I want you to know we're going to devote a particular show with Sam on the idea of the blessing, words of encouragement, words that could be deemed curses, words of blessing. And it's such a deep, rich topic that yes. I want everyone to know we are going to do one episode, maybe more, totally devoted to that. So just stay tuned for that. We will do that in the immediate future. Sam, I want to continue now with your life. Mm. We talked about you went to college. You met the love of your life in college, your wife, Toni.
Yes.
And you have three children?
Three boys. Three beautiful boys, adult boys now. And,
okay.
I have two grandkids, and I'm praying for more on the way.
Very good, very good.
Although none are in the oven yet.
All right. And so you start work at IBM, and yes. then ultimately your career path led you to something pretty significant. I mean, you at one point were the head of a fairly significant company. You want to yes. tell us a little bit about how you went from IBM mm-hmm. to really what many would perceive to be the top of the mountain in terms of a business success. Can mm-hmm. you tell us about that?
Absolutely. You know, as a young businessman, I was quite driven in my career and driven to, you know, provide for my family. And I would say in the beginning, it was done with absolutely the right intentions, the right heart to provide things for my family that I never had. And so in that quest, I started to grow professionally, was a part of launching, I was a founder, one of the founders of launching a major industry called customer relationship management. And my career took off. And in the process of it taking off, I started traveling. And travel became an extensive part of my career. It was part of the kind of the DNA of my business career. And a little travel ended up being excessive travel. And it was in that travel, I found tremendous success and quickly grew in the corporate ladder to becoming an executive vice president at a very large software company. I basically was a divisional president, general manager, if you will, of a $200 million a year software company. And that would equate to probably three, four times that in perhaps a manufacturing company. So I had 400 employees under my care worldwide. It was a global company and did a lot of radio and television and was a keynote speaker. And so consequently traveled extensively. I look back on the 20-year career and I was trying to figure out how many days I was gone from my family, who I absolutely love with all my heart. But the driven part of me kept me away. 10 of those 20 years, I was gone on the road. And while the professional success was quite tremendous, my personal life became very, very empty. And it caused quite a bit of stress on every dimension of my life.
You know, Sam, you mentioned something I think is deeply profound. And again, for listeners, you know, as men, we have this idea that, well, if we work hard and we're making money and we're providing a home and food and shelter and everything else, that we're really doing what our wives and our children want. And one of the things that I want to emphasize to listeners, especially to the men out there, sometimes when we do that, we're really not listening to our wife or our children. Because in my experience, yes, they do want to have some level of comfort. Yes, they want a home. Yes, they want a car. Yes, they want food. But if you were to ask them, do you want a bigger house or would you like your dad home more often or home at all? My belief is the unanimous response would be, I want my father home. I want my husband home.
No question.
When I was younger, I kind of worked the way you did, Sam. And my wife one time said to me, I really don't want a house like this, a big home, a nice home, and everything that goes with it, but I'm alone.
Yes.
That's not the trade-off I want. It's not worth it to me.
That's right.
I remember having a conversation with my wife one time. We had a huge fight. And at the end of it, I said to her, well, I'm doing this for you. And the profound statement from her was crying to me saying, I don't want this if it means that I'm alone and we're not together.
Yeah,
Sam,
fact,
did that ultimately happen with you with your wife, Tony?
It did. And a very similar thing. And I remember saying something very similar to Tony. I'm doing this for you. And she looked at me and said, no, you're doing this for yourself. And it was just profound. And
when our wives say that to us, it hits us at the core,
doesn't
it? Oh,
it really does.
Because it's the truth, isn't it?
It's the truth. You know, and a life that is lived apart from those that you love the most is a life void of the richness that God has for it. I had the privilege of writing a book on this topic called Road Warrior and how to protect your faith, integrity, and in life when you travel for work. And in that, it was a deep expression of the journey away from the things that I cared for the most, my true identity, who I really am. And I believe that every person has a true identity, and it's who they truly are, who they were built to be, who they truly are most satisfied with within themselves when they become the person they were built to be. And for me, I had this image of who I wanted to be, and I became that. And when I got to that place, I hated who I had become. It wasn't who I really was. It was what I strived to be. And I looked around and everything about it was, for me anyway, just empty.
Well, when you got to the top, I'll kind of summarize what I think from our experience together. I know of your background. You had a big home up in the San Francisco area.
Yes.
Had all the cars
That's
that
right.
you wanted.
That's right.
In fact, you had a bodyguard, didn't you, when
oh,
you
absolutely,
would travel?
Yes. When I traveled, we had bodyguards. Several of us did, and it was quite amazing. The journey, I had a driver. We had limos that would pick me up and take me places.
And, you know, when you're living like that, there come a time where you said, you know, you didn't like who you had become. Were there moments in time during that 20-year period that you were living where you were prideful, where you were looking at your accomplishments and saying, I did that, and look what I've accomplished, and look at me? Did you ever get into that place, Sam?
Yeah, quite a bit. And it's a very dangerous place to become because you get full of pride and you get blinded by the pride. And there is a blessing of God that is designed for a man and a woman that is based on living life together and experiencing life with your children, experiencing it, really experiencing it. And those experiences become the building block of character development, sustainability emotionally, contentment, joy. They become building blocks. They're God's design, those memories, and they complete us. And when you are prideful and you're driven by the wrong things, you live a life that's void of those true building blocks, and it becomes very, very empty. And you look back, and there's this huge empty place in you that you don't understand why, but that's why.
You know, it's interesting, Sam. You know, everything we're talking about right now to me is, these are like completely separate shows that we're going to do together. But it seems to me like what happens in the United States and probably elsewhere in the world is, as young men, we are conditioned through athletics, through school, through the media, through the environment that we're in, that we need to succeed. And most of the time what we're told is success is measured by dollars.
Right.
I don't think our society often, and has not done a good job of saying, you know, success is way beyond a dollar or what your bank account looks like.
Yes.
Success can be measured by those around you who love you, those around you who are influenced for good because of you. Success can be measured by service to others. Success can be measured by a pursuit in life. For example, I want to have a hobby and I want to enjoy that. Because I think so much of the time we as men are told, and we buy into the lie, that we can only be content, we can only be considered a success if I have X number of dollars in the bank. Is that something that you felt, Sam, or something that you've seen?
You know, absolutely. And let me say, there's nothing wrong with acquiring, financial success in and of itself, as long as the it doesn't own you or control you. You know, and I know many people that are financially very well off, and their money does not control them. However, it is an evil master. And I also know many, many where it's all about the money, and it becomes a god, and it can destroy a life. It almost destroyed my life, Randy.
And we're going to talk about that in just a second. I want to ask you one question, then we're going to get to your life and how it almost destroyed it. Sam, if someone out there is listening right now, maybe it's a woman who's working, maybe it's a man who's working, maybe they're single, maybe they're married. But if someone out there is listening and they're wrestling with the idea that, well, I'm young, I'm energetic, I'm educated, I want to succeed, I want to do well, what words would you give them regarding their time right now to help them, if you would, better measure the life that they have?
Mm.
What words could you give them of encouragement or advice to basically be in control of the things, but not let the things control them? Just briefly, and then I want to hear about took you down.
You know, it's a great question, and I was pondering it as you asked me. There are a few things I would say. Number one is it's important to establish good disciplines early on. About how you will respond to the pressures and demands of work. Good disciplines that balance your work and your life. And those disciplines include knowing when to say no to one more hour in the office, knowing how to establish boundaries for time with your family, and establishing those disciplines. Because what happens if you don't, you convince yourself that if I don't put in not just 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours, if I don't put in 15 hours every day, if I don't work not only at the office, but also at home on my cell phone, on my smartphone, constantly in email, constantly in text, constantly, on social media, if I don't, you know, discipline myself to stay off of those all the time, they will consume me and they'll define me. Mm-hmm. And my family will suffer and I will suffer. If I were to say anything, it would be to establish those disciplines early, because they become like guiding principles. And if you're not careful, you can get sucked into the lie that I've got to put the time in.
Right.
And here's the travesty of it. The only one that loses is you and your family. Work will not remember, and really doesn't care about your family. They don't care how much time that was lost. But we know we have this one life to live. And the travesty of life is when people look back and they missed the richness. They let others have that blessing that they that was really for themselves.
Reserved for the family.
Reserved for themselves and for them.
Sam, you talked about the fact that you were virtually destroyed, almost completely yes. taken down. Can you be more specific about that?
You know, Randy,
for us,
it was
please?
As I look back on it, I say that at the peak of my professional career was personal failure. I had gotten to the place in life that I really desired or saw myself, and it became an idol. And in that process, I almost had a nervous breakdown. I'm at the top of this mountain professionally, and around me are guys my age. I was in my early 40s. This young executive that had a seven-figure income, had the finest of everything in the home life, things for my family, for my wife and my family. And around me, my colleagues were in their second and third marriages. The landscape was littered with children from all these different wives. They were living a life that that was, for me, not the life that I ever desired or wanted. I loved my wife. I loved my family.
Was there something that happened, Sam, that was a moment where everything just snapped?
Absolutely.
And you concluded, or just tell me, just, and I know you're getting there, but for those out there, I think for all of us, there comes a moment in our life where something happens. It's like cold water on your face.
Right, right.
Or you wake up from a dream, or in some cases a nightmare, and look at yourself in the mirror and say, who am I?
Exactly.
Why? How did I get here?
Right.
And like you said, you didn't like the person you had become. Was there a moment where you were looking in the mirror and saying, who am I, and I need to change?
Yeah, I was at a crossroads. I had traveled so much that my wife and I were becoming more domestic partners than in relationship. And we had some things in common. We had the kids in common. We had the home in common. But I had traveled so much that it really distanced my relationship with her. And on the road, I became addicted to pornography. It was this accessible, evil, dark secret. And I have learned, and I have over the years, how many, it's a pandemic, you know, in this world. And I was not immune to it. And then ultimately, the combination of being so distant from my wife and growing more and more apart, burned out of the travel,
right.
Just exhausted,
right.
of the intense schedule for
physically
so many,
and
physically
emotionally spent.
The demands of the job, the lack of time with my kids as they were getting older. My oldest son graduated high school, and that was a pretty difficult time for me to. You know, at that time, just because I just reflected on the years and how quickly they went, and you know, yeah, I had some good times with my boys, but I wish I had more time with them,
mm-hmm.
and that really hit me. And then I crossed a line that I thought I would never cross, and it was just being consumed by the lifestyle, by the power, by the fame,
right?
All these guys around me, and I entertained a prostitute,
mm-hmm.
one night, and
mm-hmm.
when that happened.
That's when you knew.
That's when I knew.
So beyond
what I
completely out of control.
Completely out of control. What I ever expected that I would do, I did, and it was a line that I said I would never cross. And it was like the final straw with all these straws that broke the camel's back. And I woke up. I remember waking up the next day and you know, being totally completely. Feeling completely lost, not even knowing actually where I was for maybe 15, 20 seconds, what city am I in? And,
right.
and I get in this hotel room and I'm just completely lost.
Sam, when that happened, did you feel like you were just completely broken? Like something inside of you is like, my spirit is just crushed right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it really was. I was terrified. I was empty. I was I felt like I had been totally duped by the world. And there was a sense of a line that I was crossing, a path in the road that was, it's like this door that was open to becoming another statistic. And I remember crying out to God and just brokenness and tears, you know, for his help. And it was an incredible dark night of the soul. And I remember at a point, a crescendo point of that, hearing his voice, and he came. And he came, and the gentleness of his beautiful love. And it's all I can say is that the depth of the tears and the brokenness brought me to a place of really, for I think the first time, understanding the depth of his grace. Because it was like there was, for me, in my world, there was no way I could be forgiven for what I did.
And Sam, and yet, for where you were, you had it all. I mean, from the world standpoint, yeah. You had the money, you had the position, you had the house, you had the wife, you had the kids. Tell us a little bit about the hope and the joy that you've seen from the Lord, from that moment of decision, the moment where you gave it all up and you said, it's yours, I can't do this anymore.
I opened the Word of God after I heard his voice and he came, and I went to Hebrews, and I remember reading the wall of faith, the great passages about faith, by faith Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and by faith Moses, and so forth. And then it says, the Lord disciplines those he loves because he loves you. And I was struck by the fact that he died for my sins just the way I am. And whether you are have a simple life as it's defined by the world, or a complex life like mine was, he still died for you, and he cares for you, and he cared for me. And it was like, you know, Sam, I love you. I died for you. And just turn back to me. And I did. And I felt his forgiveness, and I felt his comfort. I felt this warmth come over me. There was certainly consequences for my actions that I had to face, but I felt like grace abounded and gave me the strength to go home.
And there was a time where you actually left this company, correct?
Yes. Basically, what had to happen next was God made it really clear for me to reconcile my life. I had to leave my career, and a series of circumstances happened that made that happen. Some of them I initiated, some were initiated by others, but it was clear that what God was doing was moving me out of that career. It was the only way to get back to the place of who I really was. And then I had this journey I had to go on of really understanding who I really was. So for a couple of years, I journeyed back to the center of my heart and back to the center of God's heart. I started to read his word, the Bible, and I started to see the richness of his love. I never understood how much God loved me. And I still think I have a long way to go to really understand that. But it's amazing that, you know, he says, while I was still a sinner, while we're still sinners, he died for me. So he knew that all these things that I did, you know, would happen. And yet he died for me before they happened, before I really turned to him, which is a sign of his amazing love. That's how much he loves.
And now with you, Sam, you actually transitioned from this position
right
into the church. Is
yes.
that right?
And so I, way back in beginning of my career with IBM, I had a calling to go into pastorate and actually got accepted for seminary, but chose career instead. And God reminded me that, okay, Sam, you know, this calling, you know, is still there. And so I started to pursue it, and lo and behold, it became a passion. And I found myself, as I started to pursue a ministerial career, and Tony and I reconciled. It was a hard journey.
Tony's your wife.
My wife. It was a hard journey in the beginning, but because we do genuinely love each other, and God loved us, it gave us the basis for that. And I just want to say to the listeners, if you are in a really struggling marriage, the statistics are divorce. The expectations are divorce. But God's love says, I put you together for a great purpose. And what God put together, let no man, you know, rip apart. There is hope. You can make it. And though it doesn't seem like it, we are here standing, my wife and I, that there is. And that love got rekindled in a way so much deeper because of who Christ is and what he can do by his Spirit in a life.
God took you on an incredible journey following, lifting you up in his compassion, love, and mercy. And Sam, let's just talk briefly. I want to just jump for a second. Tell me what you do today. What do you do today, Sam?
I pastor a church in Ventura, California called the Harbor Community. And we have a very significant homeless outreach. And our calling is to be a church for the rich and the poor, is to remove the economic segregation in the church. And what that means to us is that we are a church that invites and cares for our forgotten neighbors, the homeless, our local homeless. And we have a very large ministry now of homeless that call this place their church home. We've been operating for 5 years. The result of it is we have a ministry called Operation Embrace, which is one of our key church ministries. And that resulted in opening the Kingdom Centers, which are transitional living homes for homeless that want to get off the streets permanently, and then emergency shelter for women and children to just get off the streets while they figure out the best path for them. So these ministries are in place, and my wife and I couldn't be more fulfilled in caring for the least of these, the homeless of our own communities.
I'm going to talk about this just for a second on this topic before we close. When God said to you the second time, Sam, I'm still here. I still want you to come into the ministry. Did you have visions that you'd be in a ministry that was pretty much like a lot of us think, I'm going to show up on Sunday and it's going to be middle class to upper class?
Right.
You didn't have any idea, did you,
that you would
be serving people who are either living on the street, living in their car, or almost half dead. I mean, you had no idea that's where God was going to lead you, did you?
I had no idea. No idea whatsoever. And, you know, all I know is that Tony and I, when we started to reconcile, we gave ourselves back to the Lord. There was a first fruits offering at the church we were going to, and we give money and stuff is no problem, but it was a sense of we need to give ourselves back to the Lord, and we said, Lord, we'll do whatever it is you ask us. And
so when you said that, you meant it.
I meant it.
Because God took you at your word, didn't he?
At my word, yes.
He said, okay,
wherever you want me to go.
I'm
going to
take you someplace. Right. You may not want to go there at first, right? Because when you first started to deal with the homeless, it was hard for you.
It was really hard, yeah. And because it was primarily because we had never related to the homeless. We couldn't relate. I mean, that's the amazing thing about God's ways are not our ways. You know, he takes this couple from an upper income community, church, and lifestyle, and says, I want to use you to reach the homeless. And we would be the least likely, I would have chosen, because we didn't have that background even growing up. And yet, amazingly, it was because of something more important, restoration of a life that's totally steeped or defined by failure,
right?
By brokenness and grace. And so what we had in common was at the core of who Jesus is, which is his amazing grace restoring what was lost in a life.
Very good. Well, Sam, I want to thank you for our time today, and I look forward to sharing more about your journey in life as we journey together.
Thank you, Randy.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to T. Randolph and Friends. Please write to us or check out our website, blog, and conversations at trandolphandfriends.com. We would love to hear your thoughts on topics and guest ideas for future shows. We are Listening to Life.